Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello Serie A fan and strap in Roma fans. The honeymoon is over and the Mourinho rollercoaster is just getting started. In other unprecedented news, Juve thrilled neutrals with a fourth 1-0 win in a row as they prepare to face Inter in the Derby d'Italia. We'll discuss that, Milan and Atalanta's European woes, and lots more in this episode of Scudetto. Hello and welcome to Scudetto. It's again just Boaz and myself this week. Thankfully, you should be able to hear me a little bit better because back at base with all of the required equipment. Oscar is still unfortunately training with the youth team at the moment as he tries to force through a move, rumored move to England. But yes, thankfully it's Boaz Sachs who is still with me this week. Boaz, in Tel Aviv, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, Kenny. How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad at all. Bit sad to have come back to Scotland to winter from the sort of 28 degrees and sunshine that I had last week in Lisbon. But other than that, all good. Have you got yourself a beer this week, Boaz?
Yeah, I have a Malka Pale Ale, which is one of the big indie breweries here, and it's a good beer, so I'm looking forward to it. And I also have a small anecdote that I have to tell in this pod. The other day, I was walking in my neighborhood, and there was a really strange-looking gentleman in down one of the streets, and he didn't have his shirt on, he had no shoes, and he was leaning awkwardly against a post, smoking a cigarette or who knows what. And kind of, he gave me the creeps, and I walked around him. And as I got to the end of the road, I saw this woman pushing a pram with a baby, of course. And I don't know what got into me, but I looked at her and I said, listen, he didn't say anything to me. He didn't do anything to me. But that guy over there gives me the creeps. I'd walk around him if I were you. And she said, who? Which man? And I said, the guy over there without the shirt. And she's like, oh, that's my husband.
Oh, amazing. Foot in mouth moment.
But to be fair, the woman didn't seem at all surprised by the suggestion that her husband looked like the husband gave the creep. So maybe she's
tremendous,
used to it.
Tremendous stuff. Excellent. Nice one. Well, yes, just for my part, I have no fun stories really to tell, but I do have I've just got, as Oscar referred to it once, the reliable center back today, Brewdog Dead Pony Club. Session IPA, which I'm sure a lot of the listeners will be familiar with. So cracking that open and yeah.
I think those are they've finally arrived here now. So perhaps I'll be cracking one of those soon as well.
Yeah, I recommend it. I recommend it. It's good for a light session. Anyway, let's get cracking with the football. There's so much to speak about. We're back into full swing, obviously, with the games last weekend and European action this midweek, and we've already, as we record, already had two games in Serie A this weekend. We've got the midweek round fixtures next week. I personally want to start by speaking about Roma losing 6-1 to Norway's Bodø/Glimt, and in particular I want to get your takes on Mourinho's reaction to this, Boaz. First of all, I mean, did you actually watch the game? I have to hold my hands up and say I only managed to catch the highlights, but it looked pretty dreadful. How about yourself?
I also saw the highlights, although in Roma's case, you could call them lowlights.
Yes, indeed. And Mourinho's meltdown, what's your take on that? Perhaps you should describe it a little bit as well for those few people in the world who haven't seen it yet.
So first of all, it strikes me that this is a match that we probably wouldn't cover normally. It's a fairly unknown opposition. Some may argue they were an extra in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And I mean, the reason I'm familiar with the club, or a lot of Milanisti are familiar with the club, is because Milan signed Haug from them 1.5 seasons ago. So, and they played some great football against Milan back then. But this result is a shock, and it comes in a week where Mourinho met McGregor, and they took some pictures together with a Roma shirt, which with hindsight, after McGregor went out and beat up some local Italian B-level celebs, it wasn't the best photo op for Mourinho. And of course, Roma also lost the match against Juventus. We probably will get onto that, but you did expect some sort of a reaction from this European match. And instead, first of all, Mourinho's team selection was questionable, to say the least. But then for him to go and blame this team selection for this catastrophic loss is a little bit laughable. His actual reaction, Kenny, I mean, I'm happy for you to quote paraphrase him in this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, he just basically said, I think he implied that Roma needed to spend some money. And this is, as someone pointed out on Twitter, after they've spent close to 100 million euros or something this summer, he said the difference is that they have the better players. Their first 11 has better players than our second 11. And basically just ended up, I think as you alluded to there, just throwing the entire team under the bus and saying, oh, I realize that I can't depend on any of these guys. And the reporter asked him, also, the next game, are you going to play your first 11? And he said, oh, yeah, I don't really have a choice. To me, it did stink of him completely throwing them under the bus, and really, really unfair, I think, because these are players who have not had a huge amount of first team action for a while, and let alone that, but they're, you know, all playing together with 10 other players who are, you know, in the same situation. They too haven't had any first team action. So, I mean, yeah, to me, you can't just chuck a team together at the last minute who you haven't really given any time to, and then kind of hold it up as, you know, justification for why you didn't play them in the first place. But
aside the pitiful performance on the pitch, Roma are actively trying to sell some of these players, and Mourinho destroying their reputations and kind of crushing their egos doesn't really help on that matter. And some of those guys like Kumbula and Diawara were in the past considered at least very functional squad players, if not potential stars for the future. So it's very strange for Mourinho to be in the role for a month and a half, maybe two, and already being deciding that these guys are no good at all. I think regardless of who was out there, the manager needs to take the blame. And it also has to be said that the five subs that Mourinho did make, he brought on what he called his first 11, which is also slightly insulting to the players on the pitch. But and Roma conceded 4 goals in that period. So to solely blame the players who were on the pitch is a bit facetious as well. To me, this shows that Mourinho is slightly out of his depth, and that yes, he can still play the mind games. He can still rile a team up. But when it comes to tactical play, a lot of the new teams are outrunning him, outthinking him. And lastly, in the past, in the glory days of Mourinho, he would have placed himself between the media and the players. He never would have allowed for the players to be scapegoated. And now, at a few of his clubs, he has become the guy doing the scapegoating. And this is the first time Mourinho's side has ever conceded 6 goals. And if they continue to play like this, it won't be the last.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Oscar predicted that it wouldn't be too long before the kind of wheels came off the wagon, this has the hallmarks of what's happened at a couple of his last clubs, really, hasn't it? But yeah, as you mentioned there, it comes after that 1-0 loss to Juve, in which, I mean, Roma, to be fair to them, were unlucky not to come away with a point from that. Obviously, the missed penalty, but quite a lot to talk about in this game. I know that you watched this one, Boaz. What did you make of it?
As you said, Roma actually played a very decent game and probably were unlucky not to come away with perhaps even the 3 points. This was a classic Allegri Juve performance, 1-0, very defensive, sitting very deep from right in the first half, and actually not doing much to go forward, but defending the result like their lives depended on it. And there was a huge refereeing controversy in this game where Mkhitaryan was brought down, and before the ball kind of bounced up to for Abraham to score, but the referee had already whistled the penalty. Now, the referee was overheard telling Brighton Cristante at, after halftime that apparently he's not able to give advantage when a penalty is given, which is a rule he literally made up on the spot. But he also sounded kind of arrogant by telling Cristante, hey, it's not my fault that you guys missed that penalty. I mean, honestly, it is unclear why he chose to whistle so early in this instance, when in the past he wouldn't have done that. And in general, in these VAR times, we're kind of getting used to officials taking their time with decisions. So a very odd one, and a decision that ultimately obviously favored Juventus.
Of course.
And riled the Roma fans up a lot. And Mourinho was again at it by saying that if he spoke, the things he would say would shock the world or something along those ways. And something along those lines. So, I mean,
it was a huge, huge mistake, though, wasn't it? I mean, it's not like it was. There was much time between the foul happening and the ball going in. I mean, we're talking about, like, what, a second, 2 seconds? Like, he didn't even... It's not like he needed to let the game play on for ages. It was...
Some people are arguing that Mkhitaryan touched it with his hand as he was falling from the foul. But again, like that I think that's the kind of thing that could have been decided by VAR rather than the ref live. And furthermore, it was an unintentional handball. So I'm not sure how much that would have counted. It has to be said on the kind of playing devil's advocate that perhaps the Juventus defenders wouldn't have been so stood on their spots had they not heard the whistle before, and maybe they would have done a little bit more to stop Abraham from scoring. But again, this is something we would have known if the ref hadn't whistled so early. And he has priors with Juventus, unfortunately. So it wasn't ideal.
Not ideal either for Roma. That next up, they've got an easy game against Napoli to come this weekend. So
yeah, they've not been up to much this season.
Yeah, exactly. And we will have to really kind of give Napoli the time that they deserve in the coming weeks. I'm sure there'll be plenty of time. But we're going to speak about this week's big game. Obviously, we've just spoken about the game between Roma and Juve, but for Juve this weekend it's Inter, so it's the Derby d'Italia coming up, and that's on Sunday, and it's going to be at a sold out San Siro. So, well, we say sold out, it's still 75% capacity, but 56,000 tickets. That's going to be the highest crowd in Serie A since lockdown. But I guess a good place to start this discussion is the Juve come into this off the back of winning 6 in a row, the last 4 of which have been 1-0. And I noticed on Twitter someone had picked up on Juve's social media team celebrating the last 4 1-0 victories. It does seem like we're kind of getting back to seeing Allegri's Juve, doesn't it, Buzz?
It's a classic Allegri, and it goes back to one of his famous statements where he was talking about racehorses and how the way to win a race was to have a slightly longer nose than your opponent. And this is just another example of Juve ticking off these 1-0 victories in games where perhaps they weren't the best team, or at the very least they didn't show the best football. As we mentioned earlier in the Roma game, they were very defensive. But when you have a European champion defensive line, you can probably afford to be a little bit more defensive. I mean, perhaps I'm a little bit naive, but maybe defensive solidity is what Juventus needed, first of all, some stability. And now they can kind of expand and give some of their more creative players a little bit more free reign. Now that I've said that out loud, I know that sounds a little bit ridiculous because Allegri is very, very set in his ways. But it would be nice to see this amazing defense and Chiesa and the likes and Kulusevski and the likes kind of being set a little bit more free.
Yeah.
But if it gets results, who am I to complain? Although I think I would prefer to lose and play well than to win 1-0 the way and play the way Juventus played, at least in midweek in Europe, where, to be honest, they should be smashing that kind of a position.
Really? I mean, I kind of felt like it was a good away performance in Europe. I mean, yeah, it was unspectacular. They left it late. They could have quite easily lost that game, but I mean, it was job done, really. Tricky trip, if you ask me.
It's a fine line when you're playing badly but winning. There's a fine line between being very lucky and being very good at being lucky, so to speak.
Mm.
As I said, I think these wins will definitely help Juventus mentally, and it kind of enhances their siege mentality. But for me, it's more of the same. I don't think this kind of football will win a European Cup. And ultimately, isn't that not Juventus's goal?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a performance like that is it might get you an away win in St. Petersburg, but it's not going to get you anything out of a trip to Munich, for example.
Exactly.
But yeah, we should just say that you spoke about sort of attacking flair, hopefully, you know, being on the horizon for Juve. Dybala is actually on that front. Dybala is going to be back this weekend, but likely to be on the bench. And Rabiot as well, obviously back from after being out with coronavirus. So Juve beginning to approach full strength, if not at full strength, for the week or two ahead. Looking at Inter, they've had a bit more of a mixed week. Obviously, the Lazio game, we previewed it last week. Let's start with that. I mean, again, so much to talk about, so much drama. On paper, anyone who hadn't seen the game would say 3-1, well beaten by Lazio. Wasn't really that way, though, was it, Buzz?
No, I think this was a typical Simone Inzaghi performance, as some Laziali would tell us. But more essentially, Inter dominated for a good 60 minutes of this game and might have even got a second. But then they conceded a silly penalty, or I'd say an unlucky penalty. But, you know, they were dominating, probably shouldn't have given that one away. And then there was the big incident that you were alluding to earlier, where Di Marco fell over and Inter played on and had a shot that Pepe Reina stopped. And then Lazio went down the other side and scored. And Inter was somehow incensed by this decision. But they played on for a start.
Absolutely.
But also, as Maurizio Sarri wisely alluded to, these kind of discussions are only ever had in the Italian league. For a start, some of Inter's players should have definitely been sent off for manhandling and pushing poor old Felipe Anderson around. But
Dumfries, that, I think, in particular.
Yeah, so that being said, Inter completely lost their heads at that point and conceded yet another goal from a set piece that was pretty poorly defended. And I think this is definitely at least 1 point dropped, if not three, from Inter along the way. But I think that's... it should be par for course. They have a new manager in the role. It's up and down. But what is quite worrying for me is that what we considered the best defense in Italy, or at least individually the best defense in Italy, have now conceded a lot of goals, and they haven't seemed to got it together. Whereas last year, obviously, Conte built his title winning side on defensive and solidity and a really strong midfield. So slight worries for Inter ahead of the Derby d'Italia, and I wouldn't be surprised if Juve were to win that 1-0 again.
Yeah, I was going to ask you for a prediction at the end, because I know that this is an Inter-Juve preview, but I think we do need to speak about Luis Felipe and the incident at the end of the Inter-Lazio game. It's been quite a few days now, so there's been a lot said on it, but I don't think we can let the episode go by really without speaking about it. I mean, it was just glorious, wasn't it, Boaz? It just
I loved it. I thought it was incredible shithousery, and it had everything you needed, because first of all, there was him goading his one of his best mates, allegedly, saying he jumped on, for those who haven't seen it, he jumped on Correa's back at the end of the 3-1 game, and Correa elbowed him and kind of punched him away. And then the referee correctly sent him off. And at this point, he burst out into tears. Like, what was he, what was he expecting?
That's the thing for me. And obviously the groveling apology afterwards. But the bursting out into tears, I mean, we're not the sort of podcast, really, that are like, it's a man's game, don't show your emotions, that sort of thing. But this is just about being an adult about things, really. I mean... he was behaving completely like a five-year-old in the playground. First of all, jumping on Correa's back, thinking that that's an acceptable thing to do, and that's, you know, that Correa's going to just accept that and have a little joke with him. You know, how would the Inter fans react to that? And second of all, bursting into tears when his mate gets angry with him. I mean, yeah, it's just golden, really. But anyway, Inter, yeah, followed that up with a good win at San Siro against Sheriff Tiraspol. So a bit of an up and down week for them. I mean, was this a good win? You know, when the draw was made, you would have said that Sheriff Tiraspol would be the whipping boys of the group. But that, I mean, that hasn't proved to be the case. They sat at the top of the group with 6 points. But nevertheless, crucial for Inter to get the 3 points from this game because it kind of keeps them in touch with Real Madrid as well. So, I mean, did you actually get to watch this game? I know you were watching the Milan game in midweek. Did you have a chance to watch the Inter game as well?
I saw the highlights for this one, and I felt that Inter were probably deserving of their 3 points, although Sheriff did make them sweat it a little bit. I think maybe Sheriff were a little... I mean, Inter were fortunate that Sheriff had these previous two games where they played out of their skin and they really outshone all their XG stats or expected everything was over. Like, I think they at Bernabeu, they had a 0.2 XG and scored 2 goals. So very odd. And ultimately, Inter were at least prepared for this. And they got the job done, which is the most important thing. And I think qualification should now be quite a certainty with Shakhtar Donetsk losing the other game.
Yeah. Right. We spoke very briefly about Milan there. I'm going to be slightly merciful with you this week, Boaz, because trying to keep it to a reasonable time, the episode. But Milan obviously losing 1-0 to Porto. It's been, and we spoke about Inter's mixed week, it's been a mixed season for Milan. I mean, in Serie A, they're flying, 7 wins and a draw in the Champions League. It's looking very, very, very worrying. I think you said in an earlier episode that Milan should consider doing an Inter and crashing out of the Champions League and focusing on Serie A. Do you stand by that, or are you disappointed more than anything?
I think when I was saying that, I was being a little bit, jokey, and I didn't expect it to come to this. But now the way the group is set up and the way the league is set up, perhaps it would be best not to go off on some European adventure in the Europa League. I think the top two spots are probably out of reach at this stage already. I think also I've overheard our good friend Milan Obsession say that Milan's finances would be able to, they would survive even if Milan were not to make the Europa League in this case. So, I mean, there is nothing wrong with focusing on the league, particularly as Milan have this crazy injury crisis that every week just there's more and more injuries, and it's not clear when we will have a full squad. So to paraphrase myself from a few weeks ago, although I was speaking about another team, but Milan are really a lion in the league and a kitten in the Champions League. Although if you look at performances alone, Milan probably deserved more from the games against Liverpool and especially against Atletico at home. In this game against Porto, it comes after a game where Milan went down 2-0 to Verona and managed to win 3-2, incredibly. Yeah. But honestly, it wasn't a stellar performance. Or at least the first half was a very bad performance for Milan. And the same kind of performance was transferred over to the Champions League, where, let's face it, Porto were the better side. And although their goal did come from what could be considered a foul, overall, they were much more deserving of the 3 points. And there were maybe other incidents where the ref was a little bit more lenient on Milan, where there could have been another penalty. So, you know, sometimes it's, as we mentioned about Juventus earlier, sometimes it's good to win or draw and play badly because it shows spirit. But in this case, I think it was a good wake-up call for Milan. And as Ibrahimovic said, it was the worst performance of the season so far, and they really need to get their stuff together as soon as possible.
Yeah. Next up for Milan, obviously, the game against Bologna away this weekend. A bit more on that later, because I think we're gonna reference Mihailovic later on. But we've gone from speaking about Milan's comeback win from 2-0 down at halftime at home, unfortunately, to kind of complete the Champions League roundup, we've got to speak about another match in which the home side were 2-0 down at halftime and the away side ended up surrendering the lead and losing 3-2. Atalanta, heartbreak in Manchester, really. And I think there has to be a big caveat to this narrative. The Atalanta went into this game already with a huge injury crisis, kind of, especially at the back. I mean, obviously Gosens and Hatebor, long-term injuries, but Toloi and Jim City missing as well. Demiral obviously not fully fit. I mean, the number of times he clutched his hamstring, and he's going to be out this weekend as well. So, I mean, it was a shame, really. It was just a first half where it was real, heroic stuff from Atalanta up against it in terms of their personnel, and managing to pull out this 2-0 lead. But I think, I think once the game wore on, one thing to be said as well, De Roon starting at centre back. I mean, that just tells you the state of how depleted Atalanta's squad is. But I think once Man United had kind of got back on level terms, you know how that script goes. But Boaz, you wanted to pick up on something that Antonio Percassi said.
Yeah, this is club owner Antonio Percassi, who basically summarized this game by saying that United's three changes that came on, the three subs, were worth more than Atalanta's entire squad. So, I mean, that pretty much sets up the David and Goliath moment that was Man United versus Atalanta. But having said that, there comes a time when we need to stop speaking about Atalanta as this underdog, as this almost a champion, as this team that is nearly there and not, because at some point they will run out of steam and they'll have quote unquote nothing to show for this great period. And I think Gasperini himself needs to find a way to kind of lock these games where he's leading 2-0, or the same with the game against PSG where they were knocked out. I love his concept of football. I love the offensive nature of it. But maybe when you're away at Old Trafford and leading 2-0, maybe it's time to do what my good friend Max Allegri does and set up two banks of four and hope that you get away with it. Because, I mean, the current way is definitely not working. So it's nice to come out of a game like this and get praised by the international media, but it would be nice to come out with a point.
Yeah, I mean, they nearly did make it 3-1. There was that double save by De Gea, which, I difficult to see Man United coming back, really, if they had, after having got one back, had gone down again. But, very, very disappointing, but, positive.
I appreciate it's very harsh to criticize Atalanta for not beating Manchester United, who are pretty much the richest club in the world, but I think it's slightly disappointed when I was looking at the match updates and I saw that they were 2-0 up. I was like, wow, they really could do this time. And it's a shame. And it also feeds this narrative of Ronaldo as this incredible game changer. But honestly, he was so anonymous for this game that it kind of, I don't know. I hope he gave his shirt to De Roon this time, though.
Who knows? Anyway, next up for Atalanta, it's Udinese at home, and that's not going to be an easy task, especially with so many players out. Udinese actually have quietly put together a decent start to the campaign, sitting, thereabouts in mid-table. I think that kind of concludes our Champions League roundup and preview of the games this weekend. But obviously, as we mentioned at the top of the show, we've had two games already. Sampdoria beating Spezia 2-1, and man of the match performance from Candreva, who was heavily involved in both goals, awarded the first one by, I think, the Italian media at first, but definitely no doubt about the second one. I think in the end, heavily involved rather than scoring both goals is probably fair.
And I was telling you that I followed this game on Eurosport, and their in-match commentary seemed to constantly change the role that Kandreva plays in. At one point he was a fantasista, then he was a trequartista, then he was an ala, then he was an esterno. It's quite funny. I think they need to get their copy on. They need to decide what he is and stick to it.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely definitely man of the match anyway for me. And Spezia actually in the second half did all right. You know, they didn't really create that many openings.
I'm starting to worry for Spezia a little bit because they seem to do quite well and not get their full points, and that's going to weigh on them throughout the season.
Yeah, they kept putting in good performances and having nothing to show for it at the end. But I mean, Samp definitely in the first half with a better team. So I think probably on paper 2-1's probably a fair reflection. Elsewhere in the early evening game this evening, Torino held on after leading 3-0 against Genoa to win 3-2. Didn't see that one myself, so don't have much more to add on that. And the only other thing to add really on Serie A is that in the other fixtures this weekend that we haven't touched on yet, Salernitana, Empoli and Sassuolo Venezia on Saturday, and Verona Lazio and Fiorentina Cagliari on Sunday. And in the rest of the rest is Salernitana have sacked Castori after, well, just one win in Serie A this season against Genoa and sitting bottom of Serie A. And just finally, the Nazionale di Calcio Femminile beat Croatia, that's the Italian women's team, beat Croatia 3-0 and now sit with 9 points out of 3 games in qualifying for the World Cup in Australia and New Zealand in 2023. Boaz, it's time for Keeping Up with the Italians. What have you got for us this week?
This week we have European champion Jorginho stepping up and scoring 2 penalties and also seeming to leave or forget his little hop before the penalties. So maybe that's a new technique, having missed a couple recently. I also have, sticking in the UK, I have a former Italy Azzurrini striker Diego Di Girolamo, who first scored a brace in the FA Cup tie for Buxton FC, taking them to a replay, and then he scored another brace in the replay, which made got Buxton FC to the first round of the FA Cup for the first time in 60 years in their history. So good on him. Sticking yet again in England, we have Angelo Ogbonna, who scored the only goal in West Ham's victory over Everton, and of course West Ham are flying high. And Ogbonna, some people say he has a shout for the Azzurri squad, although I'm not sure where he would fit right now, but at some point, you'd imagine that Chiellini and Bonucci might not be there. I don't know. And in the Italian manager derby, Carlo Ancelotti spanked De Zerbi 5-0 with Real Madrid. No doubt that we expected a little bit more from De Zerbi. I'm not saying he should have beaten Real Madrid, but this Champions League group has been pretty tragic, although he says that he has a very young squad and therefore the league is their main target right now. And lastly, former Serie A stalwart and I believe played for Inter and Napoli amongst other clubs, Francesco Moreiro has become the manager of the Maldives, which seems like the best job in the world for me.
Yeah. Sweet gig. Nothing from Turkey for us then this week, Buzz.
I guess I could say that our friend Okaka scored a brace again in Turkey, but that's becoming such a regular occurrence that that I'm not sure I should mention. But yeah, there's a lot of... I think we need to jump further into Turkey because in my research, I've noticed that there's a lot of Italians in their second division as well. So managers, players, it's almost a third or fourth Italian league.
Yeah, interesting. More research to be done there. Right, we're going to move on to the honourables and dishonourables section now then, Boaz, unless you had any more to add on.
Are we doing good week, bad week?
Oh yeah, of course. Sorry. I don't think we've actually normally just letting listeners in on a little bit of how the magic works. We normally discuss this before the episode. We haven't done that this time, so this is just going to be our...
It's Oscar that drives this. That's what we're missing him.
Yeah. Maybe promote him from the youth team next week. Who knows if he'll be back in time.
Let me pitch, since this has been a very Juventus-heavy episode, let me pitch Juventus for a good week, having won 2 games... 1-0, which is par for course for them. I think that's they're the only team that got... And actually, I scrapped that and I give Napoli my good week because they had a very convincing win in Europe. And of course, they're flying high in Serie A, having won every single game. So that's my nomination for good week. I don't know what you think, Kenny.
Okay, fair enough. I was personally going to suggest Venezia, actually, myself, picking up their first home win. But apparently lots of injury worries going into the weekend. So maybe through no fault of their own, that kind of rules them out of the good week running. What about bad week then, Boaz?
I'm tempted to say Milan, because although they won with an incredible comeback against Verona, it's the second year in a row where they go 2-0 down to Verona. And as I said earlier, the performance in both the midweek and the weekend game were not great. There seemed to be some things that weren't ticking. I'm happy to hear other suggestions, though. Of course, I wouldn't mind if Milan didn't get it.
Could I throw Roma into the ring? Ooh. In the same way that Mourinho threw Roma under the bus?
I forgot about us. We only spoke about it a few minutes ago, but I can't believe that this result happened, and I guess I deleted it out of my mind, but it has to be Roma, actually.
It does have to be Roma, doesn't it? Come on.
Usually, right. as Kenny said, usually we have this little discussion a little bit before, and then it's much easier to make it seem seamless for you guys, but yeah.
Yeah. Right, okay, so now we're moving on to honorables and dishonorables, and Boaz, you're going to start off with Castillejo.
Yeah, Castillejo is a much maligned Milan midfielder, and I myself have been guilty of throwing the odd digs at him here and there, and let's be honest, he's not the greatest player that's ever lived, but he does work his socks off, and he came on at halftime in the Verona game, and honestly, it felt like a bit of a Hail Mary, because what's this guy going to do? He's not even in the Champions League squad. But he was heavily involved in the own goal that ultimately won the game. And he also won the penalty that equalized the game. So kudos to him. And also, it was kind of sweet to see him burst into tears at the end of the game. He'd been heavily abused by fans on social media during the summer. And apparently his family are off in Spain, so he's a little bit lonely. And Milan is still apparently going to sell him as soon as possible. But it was nice to see the Castillejo, the human, as opposed to Castillejo, the player.
Yeah. Obviously, a hard time for him. So, yeah.
He's very well dressed.
He's very well dressed. There is that. Right. I'm going to give an honorable to Demiral for in the first half of the Man United Atalanta game, when Atalanta were 2-0 up. And it looked for all the world like Marcus Rashford was going to pull Man United back into it in the first half. Clean through on goal. Demiral, as I mentioned, had been clinging his hamstring throughout the first half, racing back in a last-ditch tackle to prevent the goal. But then the honourable itself is actually for the way he celebrated it. And obviously Demiral has spent a bit of time at Juventus, and I'm just wondering if he learned that off of a certain Mr. Chiellini, because it was very, very, very reminiscent. So honourable for Demiral for that for me. Boaz, you've got an honourable for referee Giovanni Molin and the authorities.
Yes, it's honourable or not. This is a huge dishonorable for this story that came out of Serie D just under a week ago, where apparently someone from the stands shouted a racist comment to one of the players from San Michele Salsa, who were playing away at Cisonese. And as a result of this, one of the teammates of one of the guys who was insulted shouted at the guy in the stands that he was ignorant, and was subsequently sent off for insulting a fan, at which point the captain of the team, Miki Sansoni, decided to take the whole team off the pitch. And so he was also subsequently sent off. And of course, I say of course with slight irony, San Michele Salsa ended up losing the game 3-0. And Cisonese and the fan will have no repercussions, whereas San Michele Salsa, who ultimately their player was racially abused, have to play the next game without their captain, and also have this this terrible story to tell. Let's face it, he said he was ignorant. It's not like he could have gone much lower, considering how horrible the original comment was. But this is where Italy is, and the fact that I suppose the referee has to stand by some sort of rule, and you're not allowed to insult the public. But then for the actual authorities to back this up and give the 3-point win is just... It fortifies the racists, and it shows that once more that Italy is in some areas is really not up to standards.
Yeah, sends all the wrong messages, and the fact that they forfeited the game as well just kind of adds salt into the wounds.
And this is not actually in our sheet, but I guess this is a good chance to give a dishonorable for the Lazio fan who was visibly seen making monkey noises at Dumfries in the Lazio Inter game. And I mean, this is a game that's being broadcasted all over the world. It's one of the big Italian games, and to see, I mean, I obviously it was a mistake, let's call it, for the camera to pan directly at this guy, but I expect the authorities to find who this man is and to make sure that he's never in the pitch again.
Yeah, you would hope so. It's really depressing, this section, Boaz, because I've got a dishonorable for Lazio's Spanish Eagle trainer, who thankfully Lazio have sacked him following the incident, but he went over to the Lazio Ultras with the Eagle and threw a fascist salute at them. So
I especially liked his justification. I'm not a fascist, I'm just right wing. What are you talking about? What's going on?
I know.
Only in Italy would that justification work.
Yeah. Let's move away from this depressing talk, Boaz.
Please, Mihailovic. Please.
You've got an honorable for Mihailovic. Or is it a dishonorable? I don't know. But I know that it's slightly more lighthearted.
It's definitely an honorable for me. I mean, I think I've given Mihailovic honorables in the past for the things he says in his press conference. He's the kind of guy who is always up for a quick quote and something funny. But this week, he said that he was a little bit upset that Milan would be without Theo Hernandez and the midget, who's Brahim Diaz.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I think we better move on quickly from that. I'm going to give my goals honorable. And again, I'm sticking by my new rule of only giving one goals honorable per episode. And this week it has to go to Insigne for his strike against Legia Warsaw. Napoli struggling to find a breakthrough, and Insigne did it in spectacular fashion with just like the most incredible half volley that you'll ever see. An absolute rocket, and the technique was unbelievable. So if you haven't seen that, go and check it out. Readily available on the internet. Boaz, finally, you have an honorable for the Italy stars in the Poste Italiane advert.
So for people living in Italy, Mancini has been ever present, particularly since the Euro victory. He's the sponsor he represents quite a few products. And I guess he's seen quite a lot on TV and heard on the radio, but he stars in the recent Poste Italiane, which is the Italian postal service. He stars in their latest advert, and essentially he's building his house. He's being like a manager with the architect in his house. He's asking for different formation. It's all quite funny. Haha. And then someone knocks on his door, and it's Bonucci, Jorginho, and Locatelli, and they have a dessert for him, and Bonucci looks at Mancini opens the door and he smiles, and Bonucci looks at Jorginho and is like, "What have you brought?" And Jorginho is like, "Zuppa inglese." and they all laugh in exaggerated fashion. Zuppa inglese is a dessert in Italy that I don't know why it's called zuppa inglese. We probably should have googled it before
it's
the episode.
It's kind of like a trifle type thing. That's what I'm guessing is. So it's English soup.
It's English soup, exactly. It doesn't sound too appetizing, but it's actually very nice. And yeah, apparently this is the in-joke in Italy right now, and there are further lols at the expense of Euro finalists England.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit cringe, but at the same time...
It's very cringe.
Yeah, I enjoy anything that celebrates Italy winning that tournament anyway, so... I'm happy for that to be an honourable. Right, that is all we've got. That's all for this episode. So, yeah, as ever, just want to say thank you to all the listeners, and remind those of you who don't already to please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your audio. We will speak to you again next week, possibly with Oscar, possibly without. Until then... Enjoy the football.
La partita che sta decretando lo scudetto del Milan in questo preciso istante. La Juventus è campione d'Italia questa data, il 6 maggio.
Di anticipo, la Roma è campione d'Italia per la stagione 2000-2001.
Il titolo del 2008, l'Inter è campione d'Italia. When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.